Everybody reach your hands up as high as you can reach. Oh, is that as high as you can get? Come on, get up higher. Stretch them back muscles out. All right, now I want you to reach your hands as far forward as you can reach. Now, this next thing, don't hurt nobody. But put your hands as far to the side as you can go. Don't hurt nobody. Okay? Let's do it one more time. Up. Oh, my back feels better. Forward. To the side. Now, not counting the person to your side, when you put your hands up, what did you feel? When you put your hands forward, what did you feel? And not counting the person to your side, when you put your hands to the side, what did you feel? JJ says, if you didn't feel a casket, you ought to be thankful. Okay. I'm sure he'll have better jokes than that Friday night. but it tickled my funny bone, and it brought me to a place of being thankful and being and thinking about the things that we should be thankful for. And this morning I shared some things with our Grace Chapel that I'd like to draw your attention to in the book of Colossians chapter number 3. I'd like you to take a look at a verse that I think is a pretty powerful verse for believers, where Paul is discussing and describing the whole relationship aspect between believers and how we are to act towards one another and interact with one another and the attitudes that we're to have. And tonight I want to share with you one verse and the theme that I think that the Lord brought out of this for me and for us. And that is Colossians chapter number 3, verse number 15. It says, "Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful." And be thankful. Now, this verse has a pretty significant teaching on the peace of God. And lots of folks think about, talk about, consider, long for, desire, and some possess and live in the peace of God. It's interesting, though, that this particular verse talks about the peace of God doing something active. We think of peace, and we think of sitting beside a cool, crystal clear watered lake. And over on the other far shore, there's this doe who gracefully lowers her head to the waters to drink. And as she lifts up her head from drinking, the water just falls off of her chin and splashes in the water. And out behind her comes this beautiful little fawn, spotted still. And just as at peace and comfortable and not afraid, high above, way up in the edges of the sky, you see this broad-winged eagle that's just enjoying itself. It's not flapping furiously, no, but rather it's got those wings extended and it's enjoying the thermal updrafts that carry it higher and higher as it basks in the sun and enjoys the peaceful, serene surroundings. In our mind's eyes, we hear the woo-hoo, woo-hoo. Okay, maybe that's the nighttime owl. We hear some little bird chirping up in the tree just above us, just over to the side, and we turn and we look, and there's the little singing bird that just whispers its song. And as we feel the coolness of the gentle breeze coming across our life, across our face, we think, ah, this is peace. Dreams I was preaching. But isn't that what we think of peace? We think of serenity and calmness and beauty. And it is that. But here it says, let the peace of Christ rule. Now, that's not a word that I would put with peace, because to me, rule has to do with governance and power and authority and armies and putting your head on somebody, putting your foot on somebody's head, and you know, enemies being captive in prisoner of war camps because they're ruling and high taxation and no representation, and let's start a new revolution. Rule, rule. We think of it as that way, but then if you will carefully look at that word rule, and if you have a New American Standard or one of the newer translations, you probably have a little note on that word that tells you to look in the column. And mine says, to act as an arbiter. An arbiter. A modern day equivalent of that would be an umpire or a referee or even a judge. Someone who rules on a set of circumstances that are presented to him, and then those who are submitted to that ruling authority of that umpire or that referee then have to live with the choice that was made by somebody else. What it says is, think about it, place yourself now instead of that calm, serene lake, you're now out at Bringhurst Field in Pineville, and the Aces are up to bat, and it's the bottom of the ninth. Can you see it? Well, let me help you. Two outs. Scores 2-1. Runners on third. Big John O'Brien steps up to the plate. First baseman. Big, tall, lanky fella. And he stands at that bat. He stands at that home plate and he cocks that back. He wiggles it a little bit. He wiggles a few other things and he gets ready for that pitch. And that pitch comes in, and he just watches it going by because that's not his pitch. And the umpire calls, strike! The umpire made a ruling. And he watches that next pitch come by, and he waits, and it's not his pitch. And he calls, and he doesn't swing, and the umpire calls, strike! And we got two strikes. And that third pitch comes along, and this John O'Brien hauls back that bat and wallops that ball as hard as he can. And he hits that ball so hard that it burns a hole through the pitcher's glove as it goes through it. The pitcher's hand is smoking like on the cartoons. I'm just checking. Are you seeing it? Can you smell the burning leather next to the burnt popcorn and the spilled Cokes? Okay, so it doesn't burn a hole through the pitcher's glove, but it hits off the glove and rolls onto the ground towards the second baseman, and the guy on third starts running for home, and the second baseman picks up the ball, and he throws it as hard as he can, and the catcher catches the ball, and he tags the runner out and falls to the ground and drops the ball, and the umpire says, safe! I got out of breath just telling you that story. See, the umpire made a ruling based on the evidence that was presented to him. He made a decision. He made a judgment call based on what he saw. A lot of times they're not that easy. Or sometimes they're easy, but sometimes they're not. And he has to decide, did that ball come in that little bitty square called a strike zone? Did he swing all the way around or did he pull his bat back in time? Did he touch the base before the ball got to the first baseman's glove? And he has to make those kinds of decisions. But both teams know, listen to this, that no matter what the umpire says, that's it. There is no instant replay in baseball. Right? There is no instant replay. Now, football, I understand. But there is no instant replay. And the point of it is that those who are engaged in that competition understand that what he says goes. And so Paul says, here's what I want you to understand. You've got some tough decisions in your life. And you need to know what's safe and what's not safe. You need to know what's in and what's out. You need somebody to help guide you and somebody to help lead you and somebody to help you make those decisions. And the one who can do that is the peace of God. This is the key, he says. If you want to live this life that has all these other things that we didn't read all around it, then you need to allow the peace of God. And it's very simple. It's very simple. You know when you have the peace of God, and you know when you don't. If you look at me and you say, Brother Nathan, I don't know if I got peace about this or not, then you probably don't. You know when you have God's peace. And so Paul is encouraging them to allow the umpire of God's peace to rule in our lives, to take control of our lives, and to submit ourselves to that arbiter, that judge, that umpire, for his decisions. And he calls us to be reminded that we're part of one body. And then he ties something else. Now see, sometimes you might look at this last little part. If you were to read all of Colossians 3, you'd say, well, Paul's got a lot to say. And he ties in, he throws in some little bonus words at the end of verse number 15. And some people think those little bonus words are kind of like, they're kind of like the little crackers you get with a salad to go. You go to the drive-thru and they give you your salad and they give you your fork and they give you your drink and they've tossed a little handful of crackers in there. They don't care if you eat them or not, just in case and you want this, here's something extra for you. But I don't believe that these are just little, just in case you need them kind of words. There's nothing just in case you need it in the stuff. There's no accidents in the Bible. It's on purpose. And look at this again in verse 15. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. And as I see this, I see a direct connection to living in God's peace. How do we get to be in that place of living in God's peace? I believe it's through living a life of thankfulness. When we live a life of thankfulness, thankful lives, we find ourselves living in God's peace. Those who live lives of ingratitude, that can't find anything good to say, that can't find anything to be thankful for, are probably not going to find God's peace in their life. So he ties these things together because that peace of God can rule in the lives of those who are grateful. In Mexico, there is a place that's a very unique geological formation. There's some springs on the outside of a village that two springs that are side by side, one spews forth hot water and the other spews forth cold water. It's interesting. God does some neat things in the earth. Aren't you glad? He does some pretty cool stuff. And this is one of those cool stuff kind of places. You got hot water and you got cold water. Now, you know what the residents of that village did? They figured, they realized that they didn't have to go buy a washing machine. Because they had a hot water soak right here and a cold water rinse right there. And so the little ladies from the village would go down and wash their clothes and they'd scrub and wash. And tourists would go and they would watch this and they'd see them, you know, cold and hot, right side by side. And one of the tourists said to the Mexican guide, you know, these people must be really grateful to have this hot and this cold water. I mean, it's like outdoor plumbing. You know, you didn't have to do anything. It's just there. And the guy said, oh, no, ma'am. They're not grateful. They're upset. God didn't give them soap, too. Yeah. That's what the American said. Let me give you another example. How many of you have ever read The Greatest Story Ever Told? Written by a fellow by the name of Fulton Osler. He also wrote, he was a playwright. He was wrote some detective novels. And for the last 6 or 8 years of his life, he was the general editor of Reader's Digest. But The Greatest Story Ever Told, kind of a retelling of the gospel in simple terms, a beautiful, I remember reading it as a teenager, and just a beautiful, beautiful depiction. In one of his books, he writes about a lady who impacted his life deeply. She was a maid in his home. He was born in, I think, around 1890 or so, and he died in the 1950s. And he wrote about this lady named Annie, who was a maid in his home. And this, let me read you something he said. He said, I remember her as she sat in the kitchen table in our house, the hard old brown hands folded across her starched apron, the glistening black eyes lifted to the whitewashed ceiling, and the husky old whispering voice saying, much obliged, Lord, for my victuals. Annie, I ask, what's a victual? It's what you got to eat and drink. That's victuals. But you'd get your victuals whether you thank the Lord or not. Sure. But it makes everything taste better to be thankful. And then he goes on to say, at the end of the meal, she thanked the Lord again. I always thought that was kind of neat. Why not thank him again? So she thanked him again. And then she said, you know, it's a funny thing about being thankful. It's a game an old preacher taught me to play. It's for looking It's looking for things to be thankful for. Many of them pass you right by unless you go looking for them. Take this morning. I woke up and lay there wondering what I got to be thankful for now. And you know what? I couldn't think of anything to thank Him for. But then from the kitchen comes the most delicious smell that ever tickled my nose. Coffee. Much obliged, Lord, for the coffee. And much obliged, too, for the smell of it. This lady had an impact on our author's life. And he went on and he wrote about her much later in his life. And he wrote, in fact, she's a major character in one of his books. And he always remembered the game the old preacher taught her to play. To look for something to be thankful for. No matter what your situation was, there was something to be thankful for. Kind of like that, is it Pollyanna? The movie, the little girl that's always finding something. But this isn't some Pollyanna fairy tale. This woman lived this life. At the end of her life, he was called to her dying bedside. She had been a faithful member of their family and had served their family for years. And in her later years, they had taken care of her in turn. And she's laying there in bed and she's about to pass over. And Hausler noticed her old hands were twisted with pain. He wondered what she had to be thankful for now. Just then she opened her eyes, looked at all the people around her bedside, closed her eyes again, and said with a smile, "Much obliged, Lord, for such fine friends." Always something to be thankful for. Something to be thankful for. You know what? When I am thankful, I am at peace. When I am thankful to God for what He's done for me, then I am at peace with God. When I am thankful for what God, the people that God has brought to my life, then I am at peace with those in my life. When I live a thankful attitude, peace rules my life. Peace rules my life. And so the more thanks, the more peace. The less thanks, the less peace. Opposites. You want more peace? Be more thankful. I'm going to give you in a minute an opportunity to say something you're thankful for. I feel like that's how we're going to wrap this up this evening. Whatever's on your heart, we're not going to run the microphone around. We're just going to share what's on our heart, what's on your heart. And we're not going to drag it out, but I'm going to give you, I also want you to think about something you're thankful for. Before, while you're thinking of that, let me tell you this story that I read about on the Oregon Trail. I used to love the Oregon Trail, reading stories about it as a child. And was always fascinated by the pioneering spirit of those early Americans who would suffer such hardships. And I read this story about Oregon Trail. Water and grass had been scarce for several days. Some of the wagons were broken down and they had so many delays amid the stifling heat. The general feeling of fretfulness had succeeded the early optimism and cheer. So it was that the next night's stop, a meeting would be held to air their troubles. When the travelers had gathered around the campfire, one of them rose and said, "Before we do anything else, I think we should first thank God that we have come this far with no loss of life, with no serious trouble with the Indians, and that we have enough strength left to finish our journey." This was done, and then there was silence. No one else had anything to say. What are you thankful for?